FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 4/4/18. Well, trade war is off on the horizon. Maybe it'll happen, maybe not. Let's see. But in the meantime, we're seeing definite cracks in the auto market, in credit markets. Will it lead to a recession, or will it mean more money printing, or both? Well, let's figure that one out together. As always, be part of the show. Email us. The email address is kl@kerrylutz.com, or use the hotline. Call us there. Maybe we'll play your message. 914-424-4142. So we're heading for a recession. Car sales, what's good for GM? Is it still good for the country? Well, here with us, our good friend, Gordon T. Long. Gordon, welcome back.
Thank you, Kerry. Always enjoy our conversation. The spoiler alert there is yes to both.
Yes.
Is what we're going to see. And I think this time next year, a recession will be a very common kind of discussion. I'm more concerned about whether there's a potential for a global recession. I'm not calling that at all right now, but certainly I see that in the cards for U.S. I mean, 9 years into this cycle, come on. Yeah. I see it in the, as you said, and I see it personally in the credit markets. The credit market itself always signals well in advance, and the tightening there, and specifically the LIBOR OIS, and the rate at which it's up at back to 2012 during the European banking crisis, and the rate, it's more the rate at which it's risen. And we have $300 trillion that are still dependent on LIBOR. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Kerry, on that whole subject, you know, the amount of debt that we're going to have to be pushing out into the public because of our budgets, et cetera, our spending is on its way to $30 trillion from $20 trillion. But, you know, you can pick your number, but the supply that's coming out. And right now, China's not buying at the same rate. Japan is coming off of their buying. Who's going to be buying this debt? And the issue to this LIBOR OES, it used to be that the Japanese carry trade did the job for us. But now they can't hedge the currency. And when they do the currency, it doesn't pay them to buy the bond, even though our yields are pretty good on the 10-year, because they have to hedge against a falling dollar. We didn't have to do that before. You had a falling yen and a rising dollar. Now we got a rising yen, a falling dollar. And that is really significant in the bond market. But this whole LIBOR OIS is something's getting, it's just not getting enough press at all.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that the dollar was down, I think it was 11% in 2017. So far this year, it's kind of been holding up, but, you know, so much debt hitting the market, Gordon. Do you think there's a limit to the appetite of the world markets for debt, for U.S. denominated debt?
I actually think there is. And the issue is to borrow, you know, we can create the money, but, you know, people need collateral to get the credit to buy mm-hmm. things. And right now, there's actually a shortage of collateral because, you know, collateral is wealth. You can't print it. Collateral, you know, either build it, mine it, manufacture it, or grow it. You just don't print it. So there's just not enough collateral to keep the sustained credit growth that's, we both know, is right through the roof. And that's starting to tighten. And the euro dollar is, there's a real euro dollar shortage that's out there. So there's a limit. Now, when we start to push this supply out, these rates could go up absolutely dramatically. I'm not necessarily saying that's that going to happen, but that is certainly the worry, because I still think we still haven't finished this deflationary cycle.
So is the Fed just going to monetize this debt?
Yes, that's what they're going to do. And it's not just the Fed; it's in my opinion, all of the currency cartel, whether it's the EU, whether it's the sterling, or whether it's the yen. There's almost no way out of it. That's what they're going to do. On this normalization, this time next year, it'll be off, and we won't be having credit, or rather rate increases. That'll all be off the table, my opinion. But this supply is very, very troubling, the amount of it. And, you know, Kerry, we throw these numbers around. You know, up until 2.5 years ago, Social Security was one of the biggest buyers of the, you know, it was a kind of a funny game, yeah, of our bonds. But it's not, because now it's in the negatives. Mm-hmm. And we got, what, 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day? So the amount, we got $84 trillion in unfunded liabilities that are now coming due in a huge way. And we just keep ignoring. I don't mean to be a doom and gloom, but these are significant problems. And so who's going to buy it? Well, I'm not so sure that China and Japan, not just this comment about protecting a currency, hedging your currency risk, but I'm just not sure that they're going to be capable of buying it. Mm-hmm. Big part of this pullback in the markets, Kerry, my numbers show it's really a withdrawal of the carry trade. It's a slowing of the carry trade overall, not just in the bonds that I mentioned.
Well, you knew you that can was see
the carry. That's why the yen's going up. The Japanese, when you start to see credit problems, you immediately always see the Japanese bring their money home, and they sell their bonds and they repatriate it back to the country. That's just the way. This is the nature of Mrs. Wannabe in Japan. I don't know how many times I've seen it, and this has been a little longer cycle, and we're in that. And you start to pull Japanese carry trade out of the picture. It's a global issue.
Yeah. Well, that carry trade's been holding things up for over a decade.
Oh, longer than that. But yes, you're absolutely
maybe
correct.
Maybe getting on two decades.
The whole growth in the EU was, if you look where the money came from, it was coming out of the Japanese carry trade on doing it. Hmm. You know, and now we face trade wars, as you mentioned at the beginning here, Kerry. We did a fair bit of work at MATA SII, and we a while ago, and we said that tariffs and possibly trade wars were part of a six-stage approach that was inevitable. We didn't think it'd be this soon. Trump really did. We thought it'd be a little bit more bluster. We still think it's a lot of bluster in here, but that was a logical consequence that would happen when you get off the sound money, easy credit for a protracted period of time, you get global oversupply, and then you get the more and more, you lack of pricing power. And then we really don't have economic growth. And there's, you know, I did a study. We have a paper, thesis paper, that they call the illusion of growth, that it's not there. The GDP numbers are really fictitional. And maybe the better way of saying it is they're dated. They're no longer really reflective of the credit society we now live in. And if you were to take government debt and credit out of the GDP number, we're actually in a major depression. It's to create just this printing of money, even flavors the GDP. So there's not enough growth in the world. So we're all fighting for this pie. And then you get, as it starts to shrink, everybody starts to get competitive. And the first stage of that is you see currency wars. And I don't know, we talked about those three to 5 years ago, right, Kerry?
Sure.
And then the next logical is the trade wars. And then what follows that is a shooting war. I hate to say it, but that's typically what follows. And on that, I don't want to scare you. I don't see that happening, but I think that we'll see cyber wars where they're stealth in nature. There'll be stealth disruptions where we won't even really know it, but they're economically trying to create. Their countries are fighting, or regional areas are fighting with themselves, fighting against each other, using cyber techniques. I can see that as a potential something coming if this gets much, much worse with the trade wars.
Hey, well, it's interesting.
Didn't mean to go on there. I just
right.
A little bit of rambling, but this was predictable, and we laid it out of the stages and exactly what to expect.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Looking at the economy here, it certainly looks like everything's close to peak. We just had the ADP job report today, 241,000 jobs added in March. You know, since Trump took over, those job numbers have been at the high end of decade trends. And then you also see the decrease
in jobless
claims. But
Kerry, they're waiters and bartenders.
But what I'm saying is we're getting close to the end of the cycle.
Without question.
How you figure it, these are really not positive indicators. They're really kind of negative indicators that say that, you know, it can't get any better. Therefore, it's going to get worse.
It's precisely this cycle is so far overextended, and it's already seeing the beginnings of rollover. You mentioned earlier the cars. We've been talking about auto for some time. It's had a surge here for 6 months because we dumped 600,000 new cars associated with the hurricanes and the floods and everything else that we had back in the fall in Texas, et cetera. So that we went through that that bubble, that build. But now we're coming back and we've got 3 to 4 million cars coming back off lease because a third of all the cars that have been sold in the last 4 to 5 years have been on 3-year leases. And that inventory is just a wave of it coming back. Then you overlay on it with this, because, you know, the automotive industry as a fact is cyclical. Okay, I'm not saying this is a structural change, it's cyclical. But when you lay on top of it, that the LIBOR rate or the borrowing rate has went up. So now what's happening is the subprime are just not showing up. They can't afford it because even 1% higher on a 6-7 year financing, and that's what they are, and they're upside down already in many of these cases.
So
they're locking themselves out, and they're already preliminary numbers are showing it. They're not showing up in the showroom. So I think over the next few months, we'll see accelerating or decelerating sales, because we're not going to be able to sustain 18 million cars a year. I think we could be down as low as 13.5 million run rate. That is serious if that happens.
Devastating.
Yeah, precisely. But, you know, let's say that's, I'm being too negative and it's down to 15 or 16 million. That's still a big hit to the economy, to the global economy, too, because it's not just Ford and General Motors. And we're talking everybody, Japanese, Nikkei, Kia. All the countries are so dependent on auto sales and all the feeders off it that these kind of slowdown numbers are significant. But it comes back to interest rates, not just the cyclical. They just can't afford it. And the price of new cars and used cars are just through the roof.
I know.
I had a Jeep Cherokee, and I've had it reach the end of life. And I went out and I looked at a new one, and I was like, what? I couldn't even recognize the prices. I guess I'd been out of the market long enough.
I know. It's madness.
And it was my old Jeep Cherokee that I was getting rid of was actually going to be, I paid what the used ones are now worth is what I paid for a new one. So it's insane. So I don't know how people are going to afford it. And you mentioned, well, everybody's employed, but there's still low paying jobs, Kerry. They're not the high paying. There are industries right now that can't get labor, clearly.
You know
when you can't get labor, and it is true, when they stop doing drug testing.
Yeah.
And I just noticed that in a number of places, they've decided that drug testing is on its way out.
Or like the military.
Too many people were failing the drug test.
Like the military, the guy can't even pick up a 10-pound weight, but he's imminently qualified to be in the military because we just can't find anyone else to do it, right?
You got it. Exactly. Yeah. I apologize if I'm being a little negative here this morning, Kerry, but, you know, this is the kind of thing you'd expect at end of cycles and quantitative easing and all these of basically, you know, by bringing demand forward, it pushed it out. But everybody really fails to understand, and it's really monetary malpractice. When you extend it this long, you get unintended consequences and moral hazard. But what we've done, it's not the demand, it's the supply. We've exploded the supply chain around the world.
Oh, yeah.
There are so many factories that can produce anything. I'm not talking about American factories everywhere, that they no longer have pricing power. So they're having to cut costs. They don't have the money to really invest in risky items. And you kind of get into a death spiral. So the cycle eventually reaches a point, and I would argue it's because what happens is there's insufficient collateral. You know, for every borrower, or for every lender, there's got to be a borrower. And the lender doesn't give it to the borrower unless he's pledging there's some level of guarantee of getting that money back. Is collateral or his credit rating and his jobs or whatever. And that's the problem right now. That's the limiting factor.
Hey, so what about the Trump tax cut? Has that had any effect in underpinning the economy?
Yeah, I'm a big supporter and believer in tax cuts, okay? And it's absolutely the right kind of thinking to do. But you don't do a tax cut unless you also cut expenses.
Yeah.
You can't make a tax cut and then put on more expenses into the system by not cutting. And that completely takes away from it. The other thing is you don't cut taxes at the end of a cycle. Or at the peak of a cycle right now. So the timing isn't there. So I don't think the tax cuts are going to turn out to be anywhere near what they could have been at a different point in the cycle. Or minimally, we should be cutting the budget to offset it.
That's a a given, but it's never going to happen.
This is basic economics. I was talking to Lacey Hunt. I don't know if you've had him on, and he's one of the brightest guys that I know on this whole subject. And he actually, I sense a little bit of anger on his behalf that how stupid this is. He worked at the Federal Reserve for years.
Right.
That just basic economics. Like, don't, I mean, it was like these people are children. They just don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they don't want to, right? It's all populist.
It's easier not to get it, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Something. If you start getting it, then you have to actually do something and try to improve things. Well, I think we're going to see an interesting situation come about. Hey, we didn't even begin to breach the topic of failing state and local government pension plans. And that's not just here in the U.S. That's all over the Western world, where the demographic shift means there's more older people, more people retiring, less younger people taking over. And this is just going to be a nightmare as well. It all looks like it's converging to become a perfect storm. So what happens when this perfect storm hits us here, Gordon? What do we do here? It'll be impossible to kick the can down the road any further. There must be something that can be done. New system, reset, global reset. What do we do?
Yeah, that's the problem. It's the real issue is it's going to be global this time around, and it is going to have to take some level of global reset. We're talking, Kerry, right now, the global debt is $255 trillion. It's unsustainable in a $72 trillion global economy.
Yeah.
Just it's just the as the boys in the mafia would say, the fig is just too much.
Yeah.
It takes a reset. So when you have to do so, we call it a jubilee. That's the way we used to do it. But the problem now is just, you know, the whole system will crumble because it's so dependent, everything on credit and debt. My friend Richard Dukin says we don't have a capitalist system anymore.
Right.
It's a credit system, and it has been for at least 10 years now. And he's right. So the reset is profound. And the social unrest that would come with it and survival, it just can't be. So it's something has to be done. Every problem is manageable. But right now we're creating these we're in a worse situation now of tensions, regional tensions. And we just talked about trade wars and conflicts right now. To get anybody to agree on anything, it's worse than trying to get the Congress to agree on anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, they got the Congress to an exponential power of getting anybody around the world to start to agree on the kinds of solutions to avoid it. So they're just going to wait until, in my opinion, until this crisis hits. And, you know, your comment on the pensions is absolutely true. We did a study here a few years ago called Fiduciary Failure. And it's not the United States, just, you know, our unfunded liabilities is a global problem.
Yeah, Western Europe.
And so you have a perfect storm. It's going to happen. So, you know, I do notice that all the people in the greater Washington area, the ones that have money, are buying these bomb shelters.
Yeah, high-end bomb shelters.
High-end. I wish I was making this shit up.
I've got a new business for us, Gordon. We are going to franchise high-end bomb shelters, bunkers.
I think there's some market there somewhere.
You know, and we'll call them, you know, Bunkers R Us. Or something like that, right?
But no matter what, you know, humanity, we always survive. The politicians can get in the way.
In spite of ourselves.
In spite of ourselves. So we're on the other side, we will get through it. But this time, the disruptions to the social, the social fabric starts to break down. The disruptions to our supply chain are so fragile that it'll be how people react to that. And, you know, that's the anarchy that's I think troubles everybody. And because they won't be able to fix it, they won't be able to fix it quick enough.
Yeah.
And everybody was trying to survive because we've let it get to such an extent.
Mm-hmm.
That it's so broad based, and that there's no quick answer to that, Kerry.
Look what a little spring nor'easter does to the whole east coast of the country. You know, shuts it down basically. 6 inches of snow, New York, New Jersey are shut down. So that just tells you.
I, I just lived through four nor'easters in 3 weeks.
That's right.
And three of them, I lost power. One for 4.5 days. And our whole area looks like worse than any hurricane I've ever seen through come through here.
Yeah.
And when you go without power for multiple days, you suddenly realize how dependent you are on so many services. And, you know, by the second or third day, you're pulling. And I have a backup generator. And even then I was feeling it.
Hey, we had it in Florida. I was lucky. I only lost power for 2.5 days, and I stayed with some friends for most of that time. So never really felt the brunt. But look, like, nowadays, it takes them 2-3 days after all the airports have been shut down just to get everybody who was supposed to travel during the storm back to where they wanted to go, because there's no redundancy. And I think the airline system is kind of an analogy, if you will, to the global supply chain. There's just not a lot of redundancy. There's a lot of overproduction, but there's not redundancy.
Yeah, precisely.
So,
Carrie, I wished I could leave our listeners with a happy note of what the answer is, and to say this is what's going to happen, but it is definitely coming.
So tell us gold is going to go up.
Whether it's 2 years or 4 years.
Tell us gold's going to go up then. That'll make all of you out there very happy, right?
Yeah, but we've got the gold. You still, you know, what are you going to buy with it? Can you get the food? Can you get the supplies?
What you can do is you can use it to break a window of a supermarket and get food, steal food, right?
There's the point. But you know, that it begs the question. So what's going to happen out of this is minimally, countries that are living so far beyond their means, and we, the U.S., are the prime culprit of that, which is what's leading to all these problems, these tremendous global imbalances. We have to rebalance. What that means is a much lower standard of living for a lot of the developed nations against some of the emerging nations. And it's not that they're going to be better off at all, because the pie itself, we've got to get it growing as opposed to it shrinking and everybody fighting for a smaller piece.
Hey, well,
but the key is going to be how does the world start to handle that? And I did a thesis paper this year called The New World Order, where we really tried to get into, we couldn't explain what it would how it would be solved, but the changes that we're seeing in governance, the changes we're seeing in economic cycles, for example, how we do voting and democracy. One of the African countries just did its first blockchain election where they use that technology. So there's so many. Our last show we got together, I went through some of those things that we did in that particular thesis paper. But there's so much change trying to happen that's politically economic, that when this crisis happened, that's even more frightening of trying to overlay this. You know, and I see, and I know it's serious, and I'm not making it up, not just economically, but politically. When I read this whole what's happening with the China social credit system that they're going to implement by 2020. So they've got a whole system that penalizes or rewards for good behavior, for obedience, for trustworthiness, where they map facial recognition, et cetera, because it's their way that they believe it's the only way that they can keep law and order in place. And you and I were talking before the show, and you've read, you've seen the same kinds of materials. I'm not making it up, but it's just a phenomenal system that's already in place. But it does say that they're already worried about it and trying to figure out how they can handle it when this inevitability does arrive.
Very scary. Hey, well, Gordon, we got to go. Just tell us the best place to find you these days.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Carrie. Join us. A lot of things I just talked about, we have at MATA, S-I-I, MATASII.com, free to the public, and we welcome you to come and join us.
All right. Hey, and join the show. Be part of it. The email address is kl@carrielutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz. I guess I should still mention the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. We could have talked the whole show just about what's going to happen with Facebook. Reports of Facebook's death, greatly exaggerated and premature. Anyway, Gordon, we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks so much.
Appreciate the time, Carrie. Talk to you.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.